Hey Toasties, welcome to the Pyro Toasty Talks podcast, where we are chatting about all things pyrography and art and running a small business as an artist. This is episode number 5A, where we are going to be talking about shows, markets, pop-ups, but from Brian and Zona's point of view, from the BZ Furfur side. And then episode 5B will be It's David and Renee, where we will talk about it from our business point of view. So today it's all about you guys, and we have a lot to get through, so this might be kind of a lengthy episode. You ready?
Yes. Are we ever really ready, though?
All right, well, let's just dive on in. Okay, so y'all do a lot of shows, a lot of markets. Kind of give me, like, an overview rundown of your background of doing shows. Like, when did you start? How many do you do? You know, kind of what's the overview for you guys?
I mean, personally, I didn't do markets at all until we started the business.
Okay.
In 2021 is when we started it. I think we started doing markets in 2022 is when we officially started markets. So
we were strictly online before that. We were just doing Etsy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and then we, you know, Brian suggested that we started doing markets, and it was like, you want to do what now?
Yeah, it's a whole
nother
beast.
I had no idea what that meant. Yeah, it is definitely a whole nother beast. Mm-hmm. And I remember we did some research, and they were like, oh, yeah, get a tent. And we were like, okay. And we had no idea what we were looking at. We had no idea what we were looking for. And we just chose a tent, and it was a womp womp.
A womp womp tent.
Womp womp. Oh, gosh, was it a womp womp tent.
Well, yeah. here's how it started even before then. So back in, like, 2021, when we were running the business, we used to go to pop-ups, right? So we would go to a lot of, like, the brewery pop-ups, and we would talk to the vendors there, and we'd ask them, what goes into setting up these booths? Because, we, you know, we had no idea. We'd never done something like this before. Mm-hmm. And they gave us the rundown and told us who the organizer was. The first company that the first group that we started doing these with was one called Starving Artists Charlotte, which was
Artists Markets Charlotte.
Yeah, I mean, they were good. They had a couple of big events that they would do throughout the year, so it was a really great way for us to get started. But it was nerve-wracking at first, mm-hmm. because you don't know what to expect.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're going to be dealing with. I mean, it looked like they were getting some pretty good through traffic, but, you know, at the same time, it's like, well, now this is an investment. Like Zona said, you know, we had to get a tent, you had to get tables, you have to get, you know, display pieces to put your stuff on. You have to get taking payment. You need to have all the little things, you know, tablecloths and
weights.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that you have to take into consideration, and they only give you so much information. They just give you you need a tent, it needs to be this dimensions, you need to have this much weight on the bottom of your tent, and that's pretty much it, right? After that, you're on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, what I found is that, you know, Brian's really good at speaking to people. He likes to network, right? He'll talk very much to our neighbors on either side of us, across from us. We wander around and we talk to the other vendors. And I remember when we started, you know, we would talk to them and be like, I think the very first market we did, we ended up speaking to the person who ended up being the organizer. We didn't know at that point that she was, like, the main organizer. But I remember talking to her and being like, well, this is our first market. And we had no idea what we were doing. Mm-hmm. Like, we walked in, like, blind, pretty much. You know, and she gave us some tips, you know, like, about the tent and tent weights and tables and tablecloths. And it was just like, we were just absorbing it like a sponge. And we do that a lot with other vendors. Like, we'll see their setup, we'll watch as they set up, and we'll be like, oh, that's a really cool idea. That we should try that. And I think all this time, and we've been doing markets now for 2 years, like every market, one way or the other, we've been able to glean some kind of tip or trick, mm-hmm. right? Because you just look around and you see, oh, well, that's a really cool kind of setup. Or look how the tablecloth is. Or, you know, look how they have the banners set up and all these things. And it's just like we've incorporated these little things from other vendors, from watching other vendors, but also just from like, well, we talk to you guys about it, and sure. we talk to other vendors, we talk to other pyrographers, you know, research that we've done on our own about doing markets and how to do it. And I think for us, the biggest thing at this point has been efficiency for us, like mm-hmm. trying to hone it down. Like we've 2 years in, and I think we've finally gotten to a point where we're like, we don't fight as much, because I'm truthfully I turn into a different person when I'm at a market, because to me that's work, and my work zona is not the same as fun zona. Mm-hmm. So like that part of me, my workaholic, comes out, and my and that managerial zona comes out, and she's been told she's not a fun person to be with. So like we would argue because I'd be like, why are you doing it like that? What are you doing? And he'd be like, I don't know. Tell me what you want. And I'm like, how do you not know? And I was like, and it goes back. Well, that's also partially like in my head, because in my head, I'm already thinking 5 steps ahead, but it doesn't come out my mouth. So he's like, well, I didn't know that's what you wanted because you didn't say it. And I'm like, but how did you not think? And he's like, well, I don't know. And I think we've gotten it down to a point where I think we're definitely in sync more, which also makes it a lot more like it's a calmer setup. It's a calmer breakdown. It's a calmer show for us, because it's not the bickering, but also because we're just like, we've got it down. Mm-hmm. Pace, pace, pace. You know what I mean? Like that's been a big thing.
Let me give you an example. This is going to be fun.
Oh no.
So, we did a, charity event, last month. This was Shred. And when we were setting up, we had a larger setup than we usually do. We actually had 3 tables because they were pretty generous with the amount of space that they gave us, because we were one of the first ones there. And I think they had a couple of people bail on them. So I start setting up. We have like these. So the kind of the crux of our setup are these little wire squares that you can kind of combine into shelves. You can combine them into baskets and different things. They've got, you know, little spokes on the side that you can kind of connect them together. So we'll do the different configurations with those. But we generally keep them the same. So like when we have the tent, we will run them up the side of the tent, and we'll kind of build some baskets to put some things in and, you know, hang stuff from them. And when we're doing this thing, I'm like, I'm going to try something different. And she says, what are you going to try? I said, I'm not going to tell you, because you're going to hate it when I explain it to you. So I'm just going to build it, and then I'm going to explain it, and then you're going to love it. And she's like, I don't like this. And I'm like, I promise you, we do this, and you don't like it, we will never do it again.
I do want to specify that it wasn't that I was going to hate it. It was more like that whole, I need to know beforehand, mm-hmm. because I just need that kind of control. Mm-hmm. And not knowing was like kind of bugging me out, because I'm like, well, I can't. He's like, well, why don't you do something else? I'm like, well, I can't put out product until you're done, because I don't know what I'm putting it on.
Mm-hmm. Well, this worked out well, because I was like, you just work on this table over here, since we had the extra space. I'm like, you work on this table over here, I'm going to work on this. And I start building this massive configuration with all of the things. Normally these, you know, are responsible for like 3 or 4 different displays. And I start building this one massive configuration. And I'm like, when it's done, I said, you know, this is going to be for us to hang everything on. So now we, instead of, you know, trying to put things on a bunch of different displays, we could, because we've got more hanging pieces, we've got more wall art than we used to. We used to do a lot more cutting boards, charcuterie boards. Now we're doing more wall art. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, now we have this big canvas to kind of hang all of your wall art on. And, you know, it's easy for people to see. It's at eye level. It's not, you know, on the floor. It's not hanging off the front of the table. And she wasn't sold on it at first. And we ended up doing really well at that show. And then at the next show, she's like, I think we were going to do your configuration again.
Well, I wasn't sold on it until, because I was trying to figure out, like, how to make it work, right? Like, because you look at this configuration, and you're just like, how do we make this work for our setup, mm-hmm. right? And then we figured out the logistics of it, because it's such a tall, basically a tall wire grid. I was thinking, if we hang stuff up top, like, it's going to fall forward. So you need to put weight on the bottom. Mm-hmm. So, like, in my head, I'm thinking, well, what do we put on the bottom to make it more stable on the bottom so that it doesn't topple over in the front? So these are the things that I was thinking of as we were doing it. But then we got it. We got it up. And I was like, that's freaking genius, though. And I was saying, I was like, because, like, when we do Neville's Alley and Art Market, it's one table. Mm. Like, you have, mm-hmm. the space is essentially, it's 8 feet long. It's 8x5.
Oh, yeah. One table.
It's very small. It's one table. So the problem that we were having at Neville's Alley was, like, how do we put out merchandise in a eye-pleasing way, right? Because that's important. But how do we get stuff out? Like, we had, like he said, we had a lot of hanging stuff. Like, how are we going to hang it? We can't stick a nail in a brick wall, right. You know, that you know, in this building. So it was like, how would we do this? And I was looking at that, and I was just like, that's actually freaking genius, though. But, like, that's been part of the things that we've learned over the past couple of years. Yes, yeah. Working together and
learning how each other functions and, like, how your brain works.
And learning how to pack the car on the day of.
Yeah.
That.
I don't know if this is a thing for other people, but since we don't have a truck or a trailer, we've got to put everything in the SUV.
Mm-hmm. Or a big car. Like, we have a CRV, so we have a smaller size SUV, mm-hmm. you know, versus, like, a minivan or one of those like Econovan type things, yeah. or like one of those. Like, with one of those, you're just kind of like, yeah, you're not really too worried about space because you got a lot. CRV, you're just like, we're packing it up with the bins and the tent and the weights and the tables and all the stuff.
Stuffing it to the gills.
Toolboxes.
Toolkits and display bins and bag bins and all this, and not including the merchandise.
Right, right.
Well, so we figured out how to do it. I remember one night, he was just like, I'm going to make it fit in one car. Because we were taking two cars mm-hmm. for the longest. And he made it fit, and I was just, like, dumbfounded. Not because I doubted him, but just because we finally were able to make it happen. Yeah. I took pictures.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm taking pictures because this is how we're going to pack
it's
it
like
from
the ultimate Tetris. It's like, yes! It's like, yes! You have one big grocery cart, and you're trying to make all the groceries fit in the one yes! cart.
Yes!
Except yes! the one night where you're dead tired at the end of the night, and you're trying to put stuff in the side of the car, and you forget that you already put the hand truck in the back of the car, and it rolls out the back and
hits the car behind yours. I damn near pooped bricks, and I was so terrified that this car was going to be dented, scratched, or broken, and, like, how the hell were we going to pay for this?
Yeah.
For, like the expense of having to pay for the damages? Thank God. It literally hit in just a way that it bounced off the hood. Like, it wasn't even, like, the hood of the car. It was, like, the tippy nose
okay.
of the car, the schnoot, if you will, of the car. Yeah, and it just kind of, like, bounced off and fell to the ground, and I caught it before it rebounded back onto the car. But I was sitting there going,
She was going to kill me. She was going to kill me. Oh, my God.
I was.
She was so mad.
Yeah, I was mad. I was mad.
So mad. I said, I will not let that happen again. This was after she had just spent a night in the hospital. And neither of us had had any sleep the night before.
Oh, yeah.
We were both exhausted. We were both, like, running on fumes.
I should not have. I legitimately should not have done the market. And quite honestly, Brian shouldn't have done the market either, because he got like 3 hours of sleep also. I may have been admitted, but he was there with me. And like, and honest to God, it's one of those, we should not have done it, but we have already paid for it. And it was the only market that we were doing this month.
Yeah.
So it's just like, you have to power through. Yeah. Like, that's just, we could do a whole, we should actually do an episode and just like what it means to be a small business that works for ourselves.
Sure.
That's a really good topic.
You should jot that one down.
Yes, we should jot that one down.
Well, I think that there's a limit, right? You have to know your physical limits. You have to know your mental limits. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that was a bit of a wake-up call for us that, you know, we need to recognize our own limits sometimes.
This is
and,
very true.
You know, I think we think that, you know, oh, it's okay, we'll just power through it. But I think sometimes you have to be realistic. I mean, we're in our 40s, you know, we're not old, but we're also, you know, we're not
spring chickens.
Yeah. You're not teenagers.
You know, we...
No,
we can't pull an all-nighter and then do a night market and, you know, in Charlotte and
be functional in any shape, way, or form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like in this, what's crazy is like what I was thinking was like, well, we could rest the next day. And thankfully we were both off the next day because it was a Saturday market. But then there's Sunday, and Sunday is our, you know, our family day and get the chores done around the house and all the other little things that we have to do around the house, right? But we spent that day, like, sleeping, mm-hmm. just recouping. And it's just like, and then the next day after that, like, that only leaves you a certain amount of hours to get all the chores in the house done, right, and whatever. And then Brian has to get up early on Monday morning because he's got his regular 9 to 5 Monday through Friday, yeah, right? Like, knock on wood, I'm lucky I can sleep in if I want to, and I can just work later. Like, I don't answer to anybody else essentially but myself.
Sure, yeah.
And that's, again, that's a whole nother, being a small business owner, that's a whole nother topic. But, you know, but for Brian, it doesn't matter. He's tired or whatever. He's got to get up no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like y'all have learned a lot, not just about the business, but about yourselves and about each other working together and especially doing the shows. And like, obviously you work together because it's y'all's business together, BZ. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think a lot of other people, I think you and I, we have similar business models in that we're working with our spouses together. Mm-hmm. But most people, it's just like just them and they... Mm-hmm. You know, it's just they are the artist. They want to do this show. Who's going to help them? And like maybe their mom is available or maybe their husband is available that weekend. So like a lot of it falls on them to figure out. But I think both of us are pretty lucky that we can share a lot of this and split responsibilities with our spouses. I think that that's...
Oh, absolutely.
Because I don't think that I could do markets by myself. Like
100%.
I don't have the patience for it. I don't have the stamina for it. I don't have the mental capacity to do it all by myself. And David and I, we kind of have a system down together too. He loads the car. He knows exactly how to stack the bins. Like we have a minivan, so he can make everything fit. Mm-hmm. And like that's his thing. And I always feel bad because like I'm doing other things when he's like lugging stuff up and down from the basement, loading the car. But he's like, listen, you do this and this and this, and I will load the car and I will do this. Like, you're the mind, I'm the muscle. Like, it's that kind of thing. And
mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't have that. And so whenever you are just a solo person, it's really important to not be blinded by the opportunity and actually look at it realistically. It's like, okay, there is this market or there's the show that I want to do, but what is it going to take for me to be able to do this? Who's going to help me? How am I going to do it?
The logistics are so
it's a
different.
Lot. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. Yeah.
Like there's an artist that I met recently and I've met up with her and I've hung out with her and she picks my brain a lot. And, you know,
is this Jill?
Jill. And I, you know, she asked me questions about how we do markets because she's new to this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever, whatnot. And I tell her, like, oh, well, you know, Brian will da-da-da-da-da. He's the muscle. He does this. He does that. And he helps me out. And, like, I can take a break and walk away from the tent and whatever, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I don't have that kind of support. She's married with children.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have that support. She, you know, she's like, you know, you're so lucky that he supports you in that way. It's not that her husband is unsupportive. Just, like, he's not involved with the business.
Yeah. It's not his, like, thing. That's the, it's her thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And she's like, I don't know how I would do that. And I, in my head, I think, I don't know how I would do what you do by myself. Like, I could not do this business at all by myself. Like, I, honest to God, I would still create, but I would have quit this, like, forever ago if it had just been me, because I don't have the, I have, the imposter syndrome is too strong. The being at a market by myself and not knowing anybody just paralyzes me.
Yeah.
Like, talking to people, it's not my thing. This is why, like, that's his thing. Mm-hmm. Like, he's great at it. You know, I just don't have that in me to do that. I would rather sit in a corner and just make all day. And that's not great for business.
Right.
Now, just a shout out. So Jill, actually, she's a member of the Charlotte, the Guild of Charlotte Artists with us. She's a metal worker. She smelts metal down and then makes jewelry, like really awesome jewelry out of it. What's her Instagram?
Jill Melise Arts, I think.
Her stuff is really cool. Like, it's nice to see, like, kind of making these connections with other artists of different techniques. And her stuff is really cool. It's also cool to see people who are part of the Artist Guild who are not just traditional artists.
Sure. Yeah.
Her name, she's at Jill Melissa.
At Jill Melissa.
J-I-L-L. M is a Mary, E L Y S S A.
Cool.
She's got some good. She's got some really cool stuff.
Nice.
But yeah, so like we get together for some girl time outside of business time.
Yeah.
So we chat.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she's told me about it, and again, you know, like, I couldn't do this business without Brian at all. And I fully recognize that, all the props, because without him I couldn't do it. Without his support, just even before the markets, just doing the business by itself. Like, I just spent way too much time pooping on myself. I don't need other people to poop on me. I poop very well on myself. You know, and he's just like, what are you talking about? You know,
I pick things up and put them down.
That's what David says. He says that,
you know,
all the time.
So.
But, like, okay, so I feel like this is a really fair point for people, though, because so many people, it's just them. Mm-hmm. I know that I couldn't do this by myself. Like, there are so many things that are constantly demanding our action and our mental energy and our attention as a business owner. You have taxes, you have finances, you have product, you have markets, you have planning, you have social media, you have all of these things. Like, there's not a company to do it for you. You are your own manager. You are your own product designer. You are literally wearing every single hat. And I know me, I know my mind, I know how I work, and I know that if it was just me, this would not exist. I am just not able to balance all of those things by yourself. But the fact that we both have our husbands working in the business with us, like, they're half of it, we're really lucky. But I think that it's part of why our businesses are successful, though. So I think if people don't have that, you have to find someone, or you have to figure out some way to make it work for you. Because I'm not saying that if it's just you, you as the mom and you have two kids and your spouse or whatever, but like, if it's just you, I feel like you're going to burn out. Like, and of course everyone's different, and maybe not. Maybe some people are better at juggling and managing some of these things than others, but you have to have some kind of support, whether that's your bestie, like, bribe your best friend to do it on a Saturday morning with you, go to brunch or something, go to the show, offer to buy her dinner, whatever, you know, like, find your people and then find a way to make it work for you, because it's so much to do on your own.
Definitely need the community, whatever that is for you. Whether it's just moral support, like physical helping hands, or just emotional support. You definitely gotta find your people.
And it might be family. Like, if you just talk to your family, if you have teens or older kids or kids that are out of the house, or if I feel like communication is really the biggest thing. So if you can talk about it openly and honestly and earnestly with your spouse or with your parents or your kids or whatever, and be like, look, family, this is a goal that I really want to do. How can we all do this together? I don't want to put the responsibility on you, my 16-year-old, but like, how can we all come together so this is possible? And if you don't have a supportive family, that's a huge killer. I feel like that's just, if you don't have a supportive family, oof. Like, it's just an uphill battle, and there's going to be a lot of resentment and a lot of fighting and a lot of arguing. Like, there's just oofo.
I think it comes back around to knowing your limits, right?
Yeah,
If you're doing this on your own and you don't have a partner or, teenagers who can, help you pick things up and put them down, then, maybe you limit the number of shows that you take on.
Sure.
Maybe you take fewer products with you, mm-hmm. because you know that it's going to be hard lifting them. Maybe you have to hire somebody.
This is true.
There are a lot of people that we see at markets who hire people, mm-hmm. or maybe you hire somebody to do your marketing.
Yep.
Maybe you hire an accountant. I think you just have to know your limits, and then you have to work within those limits.
Right.
But I think it's really important to know what the expectations are, and not be surprised when you realize how much frickin' work it is.
It is so much work. It really is.
I think it's not just knowing your limits, but being realistic about it, because I think some people, they think that they can do 3 markets, in a weekend. Right, they like, yeah, that's fine, I got this. And then it's just,
you're literally killing yourself.
Oh, like, yeah, why? Absolutely. Like, exactly. Like, it just physically, just simply physically. Like, in the fact that we deal with wood, we're not dealing with anything light, mm-hmm. first of all, right?
Yeah.
So, like, one bin is, like, what, 40, 50 pounds right off the bat. And that's just one bin. Yeah. And, like, it's like, we have 2 bins. We've tried to keep it down to like 2 bins worth of merchandise, but then we also have like other bigger pieces. It's just physically laborious and taxing to pack up the car, to load up the car, because it's, of course, it's not just the car, it's not just the merchandise, it's, like I said, it's the sandbags that are 50 pounds a bucket, right? We've got the tables that are ridiculously heavy for no damn reason. We've got like the display bin, we've got the other bins, like all these things. And it's just, by the time we're done with the car, we're just like, all right, I'm done, can we just be done now?
We're both like sweating, especially if it's a summer show, we're like, it's humid, we're sweaty, we're soggy, like, I'm done with this day, and it's only 8 a.m. Like,
and it's not even done yet. We haven't even gotten there. We
haven't even started yet.
Exactly.
So, I think one of the things that you have to think about is, if you're doing 3 markets in a weekend, I think you really need to rethink your strategy, right? Because if you're doing 3 markets in a weekend, then that means that you're probably going for volume, right? It's like, you are trying to push out as much product as you can in the minimal amount of time.
This is true.
And if you're trying to push that much product out, you're probably dealing with really razor thin margins. Mm-hmm. So that means that maybe you need to look at your pricing. Maybe you need to look at the quality of markets that you're, mm-hmm. That you're going to. We've realized from a market perspective that, there are definitely different qualities of market. And I don't know if quality of market is the right question. It's more about the clientele and who you're servicing,
yeah.
Right? So I can go to 3 or 4 farmers markets in a weekend, and if we're selling stuff for, you know, $5-$10, then yeah, we're probably going to make a lot of sales. But one, it's a lot of work. 2, it's probably going to be, you know, a volume, but in, you know, small profit, mm-hmm. small profit margins. And it's, we're never going to hit that market that, you know, that we're going to be selling the, you know, $300,000, $500,000 pieces, because that's, people who are going to a farmer's market are going to stop by a vendor booth and buy with whatever money they have left over mm-hmm. after buying a sack of peppers
and spinach, you know, like, and their bread.
Yeah, I know. They're like,
right.
They're like, I just spent all my money on yams. I'm not going to go buy a $500 piece of art.
I have learned in my experience with the farmers markets, it's the grab and go items. You're not going to sell, like you just said, you're not going to sell your big stuff. It's going to be the smaller mm-hmm. grab and go things that don't require a lot of convincing to buy. And they should be quick and easy for the customer to see what it is and grab it. Like, if you have a really elaborate booth, people don't have time for that on their Saturday morning. Like, they're getting their coffee, they're getting their stuff. It needs to be quick, concise. You have to make it as easy as possible for the customer to buy it, to even grab their attention on a Saturday morning.
For sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to knowing your people, right? Knowing your clientele. Knowing the clientele of the market that you're at,
yeah,
right? Like, because again, I mean, like a farmer's market is a particular clientele versus, let's say, an art walk,
right? Different people, different walk, reason,
exactly. Yeah. Like, right? Because at a farmer's market, they're doing the, like you said, the quick grab and go. They're doing impulse buys, mm-hmm. right? They've probably got a budget of, let's say, $20. Free-floating money, right? Whereas they've budgeted out, I'm going to bring $50 to this farmer's market, and I'm going to buy these vegetables or bread or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. They're not necessarily intending to buy, like, non-necessities,
right?
So maybe they see you, and they're just like, okay, well, I have, like, $20 left over. What can I get? If you're bringing fine art stuff, clearly it's not going to be $20, mm-hmm. right? So that's not your
market.
People
are just going to look right over you.
Exactly, mm-hmm. right? They're going to get the sticker shock and keep it moving. But if you go to, like, a fine art show, they've got a standard. They've got a thought in mind mm-hmm. of what kind of work that they're looking to get, what kind of artwork that they're planning on getting, or what they're looking for, and they've got a price in mind, and it's far, 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 far above $20,
oh,
right?
Sure.
They're mentally prepared to spend a couple of $100 mm-hmm. and keep going up, you know, on artworks.
Yeah.
Like, if they're going to an artwork, they're contemplating spending, theoretically, $1,000 or so
sure.
on multiple pieces of work, mm-hmm. right? If you're lucky that they spend that entire budget at your booth, holy cow, that's super. Mm-hmm. But like a lot of the time, they're going to take a little bit from here, a little bit of there. But they've got it in mind that their price tag is going to be a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. And when they see a price for $350, they're like, okay. But yeah, so it is about knowing the clientele that you're at.
Yeah.
Well, so you know, you have those, like, I think we talked about the two opposite sides of the spectrum, right? We talked about the farmer's market, the, you know, impulse buy, super low cost of entry, but, you know, low profits. And then we talked about the art shows. But what's in between there, right?
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. you can do 3 or 4 farmer's markets a weekend every week, or you can do a art show every month, because it's hard to get into them. Let's be honest. You're not going to be getting into an art show every week, you know? I mean, maybe you are But we haven't figured that out yet.
Yeah,
we haven't figured out that special sauce.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
even if you get into one of those art shows, it clearly doesn't mean that you're going to make a sale at that art show.
There's no guarantee that anyone is going to spend money.
Right.
So you have to. I think there needs to be a middle ground, right? So,
sure.
You have the pop-up markets, and then even within the pop-up markets, you have different like levels, right? You've got the ones that are in the small towns where, you know, it's almost like a farmer's market, and you know, it may sound great, but you know, it's people are again coming there with not a big budget. And then you have the ones that are in the major cities. The ones that are in the major cities, I find that, you know, people do come with a little bit more of an intent to spend money, but they are looking for something that's practical, right? They're looking for something. They love consumables. They love to buy food. They love to buy, you know, beer. And then they love to buy, like, you know, okay, there's this nice, pretty thing, and it's a hat. So it's pretty and it's art, but it's also something I can use because I can keep my ears warm. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, we saw people like who sell purses or, you know, other things like that where it's like, oh, this is really cool and it has a function. Mm-hmm. So it's like maybe, you know, we're trying to figure out what the right way to market to these people mm-hmm. are, right? You know, we want to make something that's artistic. We want to make something that showcases her skills. We want to keep it at a higher price point so that, you know, she can actually pay herself for the work that she's doing. But we also want it to be something that somebody can say, okay, I can justify spending $75 or $100 on this piece because it's pretty and it's cool, but I can also use it for something. Mm-hmm. You know, stuff like cutting boards and charcuterie boards is great for that. But you can only sell so many of those, right? Yeah. You know, like once somebody has a cutting board, they have a cutting board. They're probably not buying arsenal of cutting boards in their house.
Right.
So it's like, what else is there? You know, like we've been buying the bookmarks from you guys because, you know, that's a great little functional thing that you could do something cool mm-hmm. on and, you know, people can throw a few bucks at. The bud vases are great. Yeah. They're multi-purpose. You know, we're talking about maybe doing some pieces on canvas and making, you know, reusable tote bags or something like that, where, you know, we can showcase her art in a way that is, you know, both beautiful and functional, because we found that that's kind of what people are looking for at those markets. It's yeah. a lot easier to swallow a purchase if you know that you're going to be walking away with something that's providing you a tangible benefit.
That's
part of our brainstorm. That was our Turkish coffee evening
yeah.
brainstorm the other night, was like what else can we make, what yeah. else can we do.
Yeah, so this is a really good segue. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say we made like these little incense burners. We did an art walk. But it was our setup was in front of a CBD dispensary. And I mean, this was definitely your Cheech and Chong level of CBD dispensary. You know, they were playing Bob Marley and, you know, there was a bunch of couches and, you know, it was that kind of place.
Sure.
And so we started making these little incense holders. And that was great because it's like it's appealing to the market that we're selling to. It's that are coming to this establishment, and it gives her a chance to showcase it. It can be a lower price point, but it's not so low a price point that, you know, it's not worth making the trip out there if we sell enough of them.
Random little thing about those incense burners the other day. That was the two sales that I made at that last, at Nubbles Alley, the last market that we did. I told you it was two. Mm-hmm. It was an incense burner and a bud vase. Those were my only two sales. But it was entertaining because she saw on a whim, I did a triple kitty incense burner. just because I was bored, mm-hmm. and I was just like, well, let me do something, right? So I made the triple, and she looked at it, she's like, oh my god, I have three cats, and that's perfect. And I was like, oh, that's super, whatever. She was like, well, how much is it? And I couldn't remember if we said it was like $5 or $8, and I just said five because I think that's what we had originally planned on it being five. And she was just like dumbfounded. She was like, that's it? Wait, are you sure? Really? And I was just like, yeah, they're not, you know, they're not super expensive. And she was just like, I don't care what he says, I'm getting it. And it was just really entertaining. I think they're also the same ones that bought the Bud Vase, but it was,
no,
it was
that's,
just funny.
No, was a different couple.
Oh.
But the one thing about that is, so that incense burner is branded, and they spent about 20 minutes at the booth talking to us and looking at stuff. So the hope is, you know, they have our business card. Mm-hmm. They've got a piece of merchandise that has our branding on it. Mm-hmm. When they need something, the hope is that they're gonna
remember
us
you.
With their customers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the network. I mean, like Brian has said before, you know, that we may not make monetary sales at that exact market at that exact night. The hope is that we'll get a future sale, right?
Yeah.
They'll come to me for a custom order. And we've had a few of those people who will come and they'll reach out. Like, and I'll get the email saying, hey, listen, I met you here, this and the other. I need this. Can you do mm-hmm. this? You know, and then that particular sale just like it met the goal for that market, mm-hmm. right? Because like our goal is double or triple whatever it is that we pay for, right? And that one sale will have made that particular market worth it.
Sure.
Right, and that's what our hope
yeah.
is.
We were so close to selling the ship.
Oh, so your ship piece.
Oh,
that thing
God.
Is going to sell. It will sell.
I know it will sell, it will. And we refuse to come down on the price.
Absolutely.
But you know,
hold your
ground. We had somebody there, and I mean, he was into that piece. And even when I told him the price, it wasn't. You know, he was a little taken aback by the price, but he's like. He's like, all right, I got to talk to my wife about it. And then I think he talked to his wife, and she was like, $500? No way. But, you know, nonetheless, it was, you know, he was excited mm-hmm. about that piece. And that's what we're looking for. We're looking for people who see her work and get excited about it.
Yeah.
That the ship will sell.
It will sell.
The ship will sail its way home.
So this is a good segue into the next kind of topic where we're talking about our audience. How do you pick the shows that you do? You kind of mentioned like you're thinking about the audience, but you're also thinking about where it is and who their clientele is. Like, is it a children's festival? Is it a farmer's market? And like how your audience is aligned. So like, let's talk about that a little bit. What are you specifically looking for when you're signing up for shows? What are you looking for? How do you know that this is a show that you want to do or why you think it'll be a good show for you?
We do repetitive shows, right? That's what we've kind of done in terms of, like, we've done them before, right? Like
the same kind of show or, like, the same event?
The same event. Okay. Like, for instance, we were doing markets at 11 for about a year-ish more. And they no longer do that show, but, like, that market mm-hmm. was... I think out of all the times that we did that market, I think there might have been one or two times that we didn't make good on our goal.
Okay.
Right. So they were like, it's really profitable for us. It's a good location. It's a great place. Like, even setup is easy. And like, it's getting there is easy. Setting up was easy. Like, it wasn't, like, super crazy stressful to set up and break down. And the people that were doing it were easy to work with. So we knew, like, okay, we're going to keep on doing markets at 11. So we would put in for it every time they had that. So that was, like, that became a staple.
Was your first one there successful? And that was, like, okay, let's do this again?
I think the very first one, I think we made the table.
Okay.
But it was also like there was a lot of people there and there was a lot of foot traffic and like it was easy to do mm-hmm. for lack of a better term.
One thing I will say about picking a particular venue and sticking to it is that we've had a lot of luck when we go to a market that has a good decent amount of foot traffic if we go back consistently, because people do remember you and they do come back. So we've had people who have bought from us multiple times because, you know, they see us, they remember us, they liked the quality of the thing that they bought the last time, and they look and they see something new from us, like they buy something else. And the other thing is people come by and they see our stuff, and the first time they see it and they're like, oh, this is really cool, I like it. But maybe they don't have the money on them that day, maybe, you know, they've already bought something. And the next time they come by, now they recognize us. They've associated us with kind of a good memory of their of the first time that they saw our product, and now they're willing to buy something. So unfortunately, like Zona said, that market is no longer a staple, but we've found a few others. We found Front Porch Sunday. We found Nebel's Alley. We do Pride. You know, we've got a few different markets that we do regularly. Now we have new returning customers, new people who remember us, people who come and see us and they're like, are you going to be here next month? And it's really good to be able to say, yeah, we are going to be here next month. And yeah, it may not convert to a sale. Yeah, they may just be being polite. But at the end of the day, you know, the proof is in what we've seen historically. And what we've seen historically is that we do see people come back, and oftentimes those do convert into sales. Mm-hmm. So I think it's good.
I mean, I definitely think it's good. I mean, like, you know, coming back to the question of, like, what is it, how do we choose our markets, right? Like, like you said, we have experience working with two particular companies that Starving Artist Markets is one of them. The other one that we work with is Esther and Elsa, and they're really good. We've done a few shows with Sunny Day Markets. We tend to stick to companies that we've already worked with and we have some kind of experience with, like, how they run the show. But we also do kind of research on where it is, right? Like, if it's one that we've never done before, we'll look up the location. We'll kind of look around the location a little bit on Google Maps or whatever. A lot of the time, it's also word of mouth. Like, we have other friends that do other markets, and we'll say, hey, you do this market, what do you think of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, how's the foot traffic? Is it busy? What do you, you know, like, good and bad, give me some, you know, tell me your opinion, right? And they're not trying to sell me because it doesn't matter to them.
Yeah.
You know, whether we're there because they're not, like, in the same exact field, but they've done it, and they're pretty honest with their opinions, and that's always good. So when we're choosing, it's a mix of things. It's just like, have we done it before? Historically, have we done this market before? Like, how did we do? When we did it, like, did it seem like they had it together? The location of it, is it, like, someplace that is convenient for us? Or is it in the middle of a field, but there's parking lots and structures and whatnot that makes it accessible? Because that's the other thing, right? Like, is it accessible to people? If they were driving by and didn't know that it was there, would they be able to say, oh, hey, look, there's tents, let's pull over and take a look? Because that's how we've gotten some sales also. You know, like, we'll talk to people and they'll be like, well, we didn't even know this was here, but we were driving and we saw it and we decided to pull over. And that's, that ability to do that is important also. So location of the market itself has been something that we've looked at.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, we try to think about, you know, what age range of people that are going to be there, you know, like, and some markets will actually tell you that information. They'll be like, you know, well, we have, it's mostly females, mid-20s to mid-40s. And it's like, oh, that's excellent. That's our market.
Yeah, that,
you know,
yeah.
Like, you know, but if that's, it's like, that's perfect.
Oh, retired grannies, usually over the age of 65, farmhouse. It's like, those are not my people.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's the, you know, we know that they're not going to be looking for fine art. You know, they're going to probably be looking for country kitchen stuff.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's which is not necessarily what we do. Doesn't make it good or bad. It just means that it's not what we do. So, you know, we try to look at that stuff. We try to think about, well, you know, what's the income? You know, what's the income bracket of people in this area?
Yeah.
You know, like, if we're going to go to a small town out in, you know, like, the boondocks, you know, there's a good chance that, you know, the people who are going there are not going to be in the income bracket to be spending money on fine art.
Yeah.
And, you know, whereas if you're in a major metropolitan city, you know, there's a much better chance that, you know, you're going to have people who are going to be in higher income brackets and, you know, have more disposable income. And it sucks to have to think of it as disposable income, because...
But it is, though.
You know,
like, fine art like that is a luxury.
Exactly. Yeah, like, what we provide is not an... It's not a
It's need, not a necessity.
Right. No. It's not. It's not a necessity. It's not a need. If the option became between buy something from us and feed the family for the evening, we're not winning on that one. Right. We are absolute. We are a desire. We provide pretty things, but you don't need them. Mm-hmm. You just want them. It's about what can we make that'll make you want it enough to spend the money on it. Right. That's our job. That's what we've got to figure out.
And well, that's the business strategy. That's the marketing. Yes. That's the research and development part of it. And like a lot of people don't like to think about that because. Especially beginners, when you're first starting out, it feels slimy to be like, how can I make the most money? But like, if you take the emotion out of it and look at it big picture, look at it as a business perspective, you have a business to run. So what are some good business decisions you need to make in order to reach your business goals? And you have to kind of remove the emotion from it to be, I'm not going to feel bad about pricing it this way, or other people's emotions are not your responsibility. So like,
oh, for
price
sure.
What you need for sure. Price it whatever you need to price it at. And like, if you want to make things that are specific towards this audience to try to get more buyers, like there's nothing sleazy about that. Like you're looking at your market and you are planning your product accordingly. You don't need to feel bad about trying to win people over to spend money. Like they're either going to spend their money or they're not, and it really doesn't come down to you. It comes down to them and their wallet situation, you know. Anyway, there's a lot there in that topic in and of itself. But okay, so
there's that other topic that, yeah, that other topic. Show feature yeah. show.
Okay, so we've talked about your audience, and I know in a previous episode you had said like your group is like the young gamers and the nerds, and that is something that is that something that you like stumbled upon by accident, or did you kind of have like strategy on like, okay, I want to make these things to target these people, or was it by accident?
So you know how you like to make birds?
Yes.
Because it's what you know and what you love. We love things like the Lord of the Rings, Harry Potter, you know, we love wizards and dragons and all that kind of cool nerdy stuff. So if you make things that you're familiar with, then you know how to market it.
Mm-hmm.
So when she did the board game coasters, it was really easy for me to go onto the subreddit for board games that I frequent all the time and already have relationships with people on.
Sure.
And post those and say, hey, look at this cool thing that we were engaged at the time. Look at this cool thing that my fiance made. And everybody was like, that's badass. How do I get myself one of those? And I'll be like, funny you should ask. She's got this Etsy store over here where you can buy them.
Wink, wink.
And, you know, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's like, I think what you do is if you're targeting a market that you know, that you're familiar with, then you know how to reach those people. Mm-hmm. If we were planning on making something that had to do with, let's say, urban culture, you know, like I don't know a lot about urban culture. I don't know how to reach those people. I don't know how to, you know, I'm some suburban white guy, you know, I don't know anything about that. So, you know, it would be really hard for me to be able to find the inroads to get this in front of people and speak about it with authority. Whereas if I'm talking, you know, if I'm trying to sell her stuff to people who, you know, are into Dungeons and Dragons, oh yeah, you bet your ass I could talk about that.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that it's kind of cliche, the whole do what you love, make what you know, right? It sounds really cliche, but at the heart of it, I mean, I think that is a really big thing because, again, you know, I can make it, but I can speak to mm-hmm. it. Brian can speak about this, you know, Lord of the Rings coaster set that I made, and like, and he'll point out these little finer details, you know, like, oh, take a look at this one. It has the Shire in it. And like, someone who isn't into that is just going to be like, oh, mm-hmm. cool. It's a map. You know, that's what they see. Yeah. But someone who's into it is going to be into
this
it.
This is true.
You know, and I think that that makes a difference when you, as an artist, like, we were talking about this the other day. I don't know if it was me and you or me and you, Brian, where it was like, well, make what you love, right? Like, because if you don't love it, you hate having to do mm-hmm. it, right? You don't want to make it. You don't want to work on it. You don't want to do it. You drag your feet for 3,000 years because you're just like, eh, I don't wanna, right? You know I have to, but I don't wanna. Whereas if you love it, it's just like, you're just on a roll, mm-hmm. right? Like, it's just like steamrolling. Yeah, I got, you know, 20 cats, kitty shelf sitters that I am making because I love yeah. cats. You know what I mean? Like, it's easy to do. It's easy to talk about. And I think the animation, like, when we're at a market talking about it, our enthusiasm is very infectious, mm-hmm. I think, because people are just like, oh, really? No. And then, you know, you can talk about some stuff that's not even necessarily about the market itself or about your product. You're just like, hey, did you see that Reddit? There's this Reddit thing about this thing and whatever, or whatever it is that you were talking about. And it's just kind of like, you've got their attention and you kind of create, I don't want to say a bond, but like, you find some kind of connection of interest mm-hmm. and they're just like, now you've, even if they don't buy anything, they've thought about you.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause we've had people who didn't buy and they'll come by and they're like, oh, hey, I know you, you're the fur people. Right. And yeah. You do the wood thing. Right. Like, and they may not remember specifically what it is that
but
I
they
do
thought about you.
Or yes, but the, that's right. Like, they look at us and they're like, yeah. And they're like, I know you. Right. And then the connections are made. And then at some point you get an email. Hey, so yeah, we were talking and I was talking about this. And so can you make that? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and that's
always really nice when that happens.
It is. It's a lot of word of mouth.
One thing I will say, and this is, I think, you know, I know that we said we were going to talk about tips, and maybe we could just kind of litter these throughout the episode. So one thing that I think is critical to having a successful market is people are going to come to you and talk about custom work, right? They're going to say, oh, you know, I really like what you do. And you say, well, you know, if you don't like what you see here, you know, we do custom work also. And then you start seeing the wheels turn. Mm-hmm. It's really important at that time to try to get the sale.
Right.
Right? So you have to kind of reel them in a little bit. And you have to start asking them questions. Oh, well, what did you have in mind? And sometimes they'll just be like, well, I really don't have anything in mind. And sometimes it takes a little bit of prying and or maybe you give them a suggestion. You say, oh, you know, well, you know, what are you into? You know, and they might say, well, I'm into music. And I'll be like, oh, you know, we did this really cool Van Halen piece for somebody last year. And they did a pick box for their, you know, to put their guitar picks mm-hmm. in. And they'll be like, oh, wow, that sounds really cool. Do you have a picture of that? And to pull it up on the Instagram and show it to them. And now next thing you know, we're talking about a sale.
Sure.
You know, we've gone from, you know, talking about, well, I might want something to them now being excited about what it is mm-hmm. that we're about to make for
yeah.
them. And then the other thing is get that sale in writing that day.
Yeah.
Right? So even if, you know, we carry custom order forms with mm-hmm. us. To all of our markets, and we will have people fill out all their contact information and what it is that they want, and we'll give them a quote, and we will take a deposit right then and there,
okay.
because now they are committed. Mm-hmm. They've put money into this. They are. The sale is not going to fall. I mean, there's still a chance it's gonna fall through, but you know there is a much better chance of that sale being successful if we get the Even if we don't take the deposit, I don't really like to take orders without taking a deposit. Mm-hmm. But even if we don't take a deposit, at least getting that contact information, well, we have an inroad.
Well, I mean, if they're talking about a custom order, a lot of the custom orders that we've done, I want to say at least 75 to maybe 80% of them, they kind of already know what they want, right? Like, they'll be like, well, can you do a cutting board with this on it, right? So I can give them a quote on a price right then and there. And then if they're really serious about it, I'm like, well, you can place the custom order now. I will need you to pay for it because it is a custom order. It will be only made for you. And then I explain my whole particular process mm-hmm. with them. So they pay for it downright right there.
So here's a question for you about that process. How do you know what the price is going to be? At the drop of a hat, well, just like guesstimating? Do you have like an inner formula?
Okay. For instance, on a small cutting board, like on a general small cutting board, I know that it's going to take, I'm not going to do color, right? It's going to be line work. Sure. It's probably going to take me, maybe an hour and a half to do a pattern, right? The burn itself will probably take maybe half an hour or so. So let's just say I'm doing about 2 hours worth of work, right? And then the cost of the cutting board itself is like, under $10, right? So let's just say I'm selling that cutting board on site for, I don't know, let's say $60. That's what I'll charge them.
Okay.
Because generally speaking, if they're getting like a small cutting board, like again, they're not doing lots of shading. They're not requiring shading. Mm-hmm. They're not going to want color. The seal is going to be food safe, and I already know that. It's generally going to be about $60 worth. It's going to be a $60 sale for a small cutting board.
Okay.
Now, depending on what other factors there are, like the bigger custom orders that I've done, right? Like someone said, they wanted a maybe 6-foot sign, a 6-foot long sign to put in a barn and whatever. And I was like, okay, well, I can't give you a quote, but I took down the order. I took down their name and whatever. And I did not take a deposit on that because I didn't feel comfortable with quoting her. And I said that to her. I said, I don't know what your quote is going to be because it's going to depend on how much the wood is. But I have to go see and what kind of wood they mm-hmm. have and how much the price of the wood is going to be. Right. And then how much time. So at that point, I don't take payment or a deposit okay. because for me personally, I want to have that discussion with you. Like, I want to have my ducks in a row. Like, I want to know how much the wood is going to be. I want to know how, like, a guesstimate of how much time I think I'm going to use or I'm going to need to do that order, right? Like, and that's from sanding it down, like prepping the wood to doing the pattern to doing the burn to sealing it to putting hardware on, right? And I'll kind of estimate that and then I give them a quote.
Okay.
And then they either take it or leave it.
Okay.
Right. And I have, knock on wood, only had one person ghost me after that conversation.
Nice.
Only one person. But to be fair, that one person, I was slightly disappointed that they ghosted me because it was going to be a really cool custom order. But I'm also not really surprised.
Yeah. There are some people like that. You just kind of know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just a couple of other things to take into consideration if you're taking custom orders on site. One, make sure that they know that the price that you're quoting them is going to be based on, you know, like what you're describing to them, and that you're going to send that to them in some kind of a mock-up.
Yeah.
And if that's not what they want and they come back saying that they want a different kind of wood, they want it different dimensions, they want something that has color, and originally it was going to be black and white, that the price that you're quoting them is for exactly what it is that you're, you know, filling out on the custom order form. Mm-hmm. And this way, you know, you don't end up having a conversation where they come back and say, oh, well, now I want it in color. Now they know that, well, you're changing the parameters, that's going to change the cost as well. Because it could just, you know, it just avoids any sort of hurt feelings.
What percentage, like, whenever we talk about shows with you guys, you're always talking about custom orders. Would you say, like, your shows are 50% taking custom orders? Or, like, because that's what, not at all, but how our shows are like. And we just have different business models in that way. So I'm curious how much of it is future work that you're just going to shows kind of, like, networking for future orders from.
I think that it's kind of a toughy question because some shows will do a lot of selling on site and then mm-hmm. some just end up being custom orders.
Right.
And we don't necessarily sell much on site. We'll take a custom order and they'll make the purchase there, but it's custom work right. that they get after the fact.
We had about 35 custom orders last year.
Okay.
No, we had a little bit more than that.
But you're pitching. Okay, so from what I understand, you're pitching your customs a lot in conversation because you said something like, well, if you don't exactly like what you see, we also do custom. Is that like a frequent thing that you're telling your customers over
yes.
and over? Okay, so yes. for us, we like don't mention it unless somebody asks. You know, if someone's really looking at something, they might come over and be like, do you do custom work? And my conversation is like totally different than the conversation you have because I don't really want the custom work. I don't. Customs are not my favorite. And I tell people I take very limited customs, but sometimes. So tell me what you're thinking, but, you know, I'll let you know.
Mm. And see, the thing is, I love doing custom work 99.9% of the time. I'll be honest. Okay, it's probably a little less than that. But no, I do like the customers because it's, you know, it goes back to being bored, that ADHD brain of being bored, right? Like, I like the challenge of and the uniqueness that some people come up with. Like I had a custom order where I did a set from a tile game, a different tile game that we play called Hive, and it's basically just insects. So this one person came up and he was like, well, can you do these but based on these insects instead? And it was just a really cool idea. So it was a lot of fun for me to do that. And he said, okay, well, these are the insects that I want in this kind of style, but he let me have creative discretion about some of the things on it. So that was kind of fun because he was giving me an idea and I was able to work mm-hmm. through that. So for me, that's fun. But I always tell them I don't do portraits, and I can see some of them, they're crestfallen, and I'm just like, it's not on my wheelhouse, and I'm not about to mm-hmm. do that. Plus if I do customs, at least that means I have something to work on.
This is true.
Outside of like, you know, like, cause we sit here and sometimes it's just like, okay, how many charcuterie boards can I actually prep for the next right. show? You know what I mean? Like, okay, how many of this can I make that didn't sell in the last like 5 markets can I actually make? Like what? And then it's like, well, what can I make that will sell? And then you're sitting there, you're pondering for like a crazy amount of time, like, what can I make? What can I do? What can I do? Right? Whereas, at least if I have a custom, I'm like, I can just focus on that. And then I'll be like, oh! Well, that's how my mind mm-hmm. works anyway. It's like, I'll be working on something, and I'll be like, ooh, I should try making this on that piece of wood that I have hanging out. Yes, that's what I'll do. Like, so that's kind of how my mind will work. So, a lot of the time, the customs will trigger something for me.
Okay.
One other thing that I like to... the way that I like to kind of frame our business is our business is more of a people business, mm-hmm. right? We don't do a lot of work in a vacuum and then sell it. We do a lot more talking to people, getting to know people. We spend a lot of time, and not just Ona, both of us spend a lot of time talking to people, getting to know people, and trying to understand what it is that they love, what it is that they want out of a custom piece. And I think that that's just something non-monetary that we get out of this business is you build relationships with people. We've done custom work for other businesses and done like cross promotional things where we, this guy, Dan runs a company called Dance Desserts. We did a, Zona did a nice little display piece for him to, you know, use when he took pictures of his cupcakes for social media. You know, we've done custom pieces like that for other businesses, and you know, we've gotten to know these people. We've become friends with them. We have some of our stuff up in a shop in Monroe, and at Christmas time, you know, we got to know the owner. And we made a special ornament, Christmas ornament for her as a gift. And, you know, it's just like these little things, these little kind of slices of life that, you know, we get out of getting to know our customers is something that we get back from the business. Mm-hmm. And it's something that helps us to just enjoy the business that little bit more. Yeah. So. That's my personal take on it.
Okay, so I have some kind of like rapid fire questions for you. Ready to go? Okay. Okay. What is your best show ever?
Pride.
Favorite is definitely Pride. Besides it being monetarily great for us, it's just a vibe, it's just a feeling, it makes me happy. Like I'm just happy when I'm there. I guess it's a throwback to previous years in a happier time. Not that I'm not happy now, that doesn't sound right, but like
happy times.
I love my life, don't get me wrong, I love my life. Just like, you know, years past when I was younger in my 20s, like Pride in New York was just like crazy. I loved it. I just love doing Charlotte Pride. It's the people that are there. It's the people we've met. And I'm not talking just vendors. Like, I'm talking clientele. Yeah, yeah. Like, just people just stop by and like, they're just out of their effing minds. And I love the vibe. I just love the vibe.
Talk about being in the business of people. You know, that is a great way to, you know, to get to know people, to be at an event where they're excited to be there. You know, it's not like, you know, they're just kind of moping through a market and hoping to see something that they can get as a Mother's Day gift for their mom at the last minute. You know, it's people who are excited, who, you know, this is the highlight of, for some of them, it's the highlight of the year for them. You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's just you feed off that energy and give it right back.
Okay, what is your worst show or your least favorite?
My personal most disappointing was Greensboro.
Is that the convention center one?
Yeah.
Yes. The complete, like, it was disappointment on level. I mean, it was a 3-day show. We were expecting greatness, and it bombed so hard for it to be a 3-day show and for us to make zero. So no, I'm lying.
We
one sale.
No. We made one sale. Yes.
I don't even remember that much.
We did.
But like, clearly, we made not enough sales to even like.
We didn't cover the cost of
even close. No. We didn't even cover enough to cover the hotel room for 3 nights.
I hate that.
So yeah, that was definitely the most disappointing, and. Unfortunately, like, people, the vendors that we were talking to that were there were just like, oh, you know, I can't believe it's so bad. I mean, the one that they do in Myrtle Beach is phenomenal compared to this, da 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 da. And it's just like, well, that's great for Myrtle Beach, but we're not in Myrtle Beach, right? And it's just like, we're not going to Myrtle Beach. Like, our lives are not going to allow us to go to Myrtle Beach, you know, go back to being a support and whatnot. Yeah, yeah. Like, there's no way I'm driving to Myrtle Beach by myself and setting up. Are you on crack? You know, like, that's just not gonna happen. And it's not like Brian can just up and go and be like, all right, I'm just gonna take a week off of work and go down to Myrtle Beach. You know, like, that's not gonna happen either.
Down to old dirty Myrtle.
I mean, I think Myrtle Beach could be a fun market to do, but like that's gonna take some serious planning.
Yeah,
on it's so a big many thing. Different levels. Yeah. But okay, next question.
Next question: what is your best seller at shows?
At shows.
Yeah, in person, your shows and
online, it was the Carcassonne mm-hmm. coasters, but at shows,
all those that wander.
Oh, people love that. We do this piece from Lord of the Rings that has all of the, you know, the characters, you know, and, you know, profile. Okay. It's kind of a well-known piece yeah. with, you know, the entire fellowship walking. And people love that piece.
So you make it multiple times.
I think that
do
is
do you
the
always
one
have
piece.
One on hand?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, there's also one that we do that's the Dad's Grill.
Oh, no, you know what? I think Dad's Grill is probably the number one.
Yeah.
And that one's... We have two on hand. We have one, at least one or two on hand to sell at a market. But... I think we rarely ever sell that one. We get the, can you put so-and-so's name on it?
A custom from it.
It becomes a custom. And, like, it's almost perfect to be a custom. Mm-hmm. Because I can just change a yeah. name, you know? And, like, and I had one person who asked for things to be phrased a little differently, change the words a little bit differently. Mm-hmm.
Somebody put a custom. They had a special
bottle opener
that was special to them.
Yeah, she came and dropped it off, and that just makes it that much more special. But also it's a little more anxiety inducing because now you've given me a very specific piece that is yours, and God forbid I break it or lose it, I am screwed. But you know, but it makes that piece that much more special for that person. And it was actually a Christmas gift from another vendor. His wife was the one who approached me, and we were doing it in secret. He didn't have any clue. So she would keep on coming over to talk to me, and he was like looking at her funny, like, why do you keep going over there?
Come over here and help me sell honey.
Exactly. I was getting the squinty eye, right? And it was funny because I got it to her, and then she... texted me later, and she was just, you know, she was raving about it and how she gave it to him, and he was really happy. And then we happened to see him, I think, after the fact.
Was that another market?
At a market at 11. And he was just like, I had to stop by and just tell you. And he was raving about it, and he was like, it was so great. And I noticed that the bottle opener was ours, and I was wondering where it disappeared to. And it was like, it was really great. But yeah, I think Dad's Grill is probably our number one.
And one other piece it's not a huge seller, but she did these little astrology pieces. It's like women, and they're kind of like symbolize their astrological sign. So okay. like, you know, maybe the Scorpio has a... Yeah, uh-huh. they're zodiacs, okay. right? So, you know, maybe the Scorpio has, she's got like a scorpion tail, or, you know, Aquarius has like a bucket of water or something like that. And we have them all lined up, and people stop by all the time to just flip through them and find theirs. And then they look at it, and we've got the ones for the women and the one for the men, and then they look and they find theirs, and then they find the one for their boyfriend, and they put them together, and they, you know, they talk about them. And a lot of times, you know, sometimes people buy them, but, you know, sometimes people just while they're there, after they find them, then they talk to us, or they look at something else, and they end up buying something else. But it's an eye catcher, right? And it brings people in, it engages people. And I think that's as valuable as, you know, some of the things that, you know, actually that sell, you know, because it is a way to draw people in and start a conversation with them.
Nice. Yeah, people really love their zodiacs. Mm-hmm. Yep, I've noticed that as well. Okay, so on the flip side, what is your worst seller? What is the biggest
anytime,
flop?
Anytime that we do something that is like, anytime that we do something that looks like it's indistinguishable from something that's done with a CNC. So like when, you know, we just cut something that's, you know, when she burns a piece that is like an SVG or something, that's like something clever, like a clever little quip,
sure,
you know, or something like that. They never sell because nobody wants to pay hand burned prices for something that doesn't look that much different than something that was done with a CNC.
So you're thinking of like the generic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed the same thing with us. Like, I have a couple of Home Sweet Home signs that I've had for years and they still haven't sold. Mm-hmm. And I've lowered the price to where now they're like $20 and I still can't sell those bad boys. Mm-hmm. But I think
she did this one that said "My Kitchen, My Rules," uh-huh, right? And it had like a knife on it, and women would come by all the time and they'd be like, "Oh, look, My Kitchen, My Rules," and they would look at it and they'd show it to their friend, and then they'd turn around and they'd look at the price, and it's just like the price that we're charging for something, mm-hmm, like that is not the price that people who are looking to buy that type of thing are looking to spend.
Yep, this is very true. I feel like this. Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something?
I was just going to say, for a lot of those things, the entire experience that you want from it is captured in that moment of finding it in the store and being like, "Oh, look at this," and showing it to your friend. And then, like, you buy it out of obligation for having had that fun. But, like, what are you going to put it on your wall? And then anytime somebody comes in, you're going to be like, "Haha, my kitchen." Like, but that's not a thing that people are willing to pay big money for most times.
Mm-mm. That's it.
Yep. It has to be something really like ridiculously special, and it's just like, well, what is that ridiculously special for you? And it's not what it is that that I have to offer.
I feel like this is a really good point that we could have a whole nother converse or a whole nother episode about. Is the trap of falling into doing things that you think will sell, and then they don't actually sell. So like when I did my Home Sweet Homes, you know, I bought the PNG file off of Etsy. It was like a pack of 50 different Home Sweet Home fonts or whatever. And I printed off a couple and did them because I was thinking, okay, what is something that is quick and easy that I can do that's like, that appeals to everyone? You know, someone's going to buy this because it's just anyone.
It's universal.
Yeah, it's universal. Mm-hmm. Like, anyone could pick this up, but that is the exact reason why it has not sold. It is because it is generic. It has no personality to it. People don't want to pay $50 for a hand-burned Home Sweet Home sign like that when you can go to TJ Maxx or Home Goods or Marshalls and get one for $7.99. That's almost the exact same thing. Like, people aren't willing to spend that money on that thing. So if you're going to put in the time an effort to think about, okay, well, what can I sell to my audience? Make sure that it's you. Like, make sure that it's something you want to do, not something that you think is going to sell.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
For sure.
Because if you're just like, oh, well, I want to do these keychains because I think they'll sell, and I think I'll do these coasters because they'll sell, then you're going to be the generic pyrography lady that doesn't have anything special. And that's going to suck even more. So it's like, if you're going to put in the time and effort to burn, make sure your personality is in it.
I think it's where's that sweet spot between, I need to make sure that I have stuff that is going to sell, right? Like generic something or other, right? That I can sell at a lower price point, right? And showing your personality and people wanting that personality. Does that make sense?
People want.
You just have to remember
the thing that has a piece of you in it.
And they don't want the thing that they can get from the lady two booths down that she did with her Cricut that, you know, is going to cost a third of the price. And yeah, it's not hand burned, so it's not made to last for a lifetime, but maybe they don't really care.
Right.
that their home sweet home sign or their howdy all sign is not going to last mm-hmm. a lifetime.
Right. Like, it's fulfilled its purpose for $10. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so those were my four, like, rapids. Are there...
So I wanna do a couple of other tips.
Sure. Yep. Let's go for it.
People. So one is buy yourself a hand truck.
Like a cart, like a folding cart.
A folding cart, a hand truck, something that has some torque that you can use to carry things, because and make sure, like, don't skimp out on it. You know, I've seen far too many people with these chintzy little carts that, you know, they pull around and they tip over, and, you know, this is your product that you're mm-hmm. carrying around. This is, you know, when I'm carrying a crate full of her pieces, we're talking about thousands of dollars right. worth of artwork, and it's not a small, light box. You know, this is heavy wood product. So, you know, make sure that you're putting the money in to get something good. We've got, like, one of those hand carts that, you know, you put it's on its steel. Side and you
we can, have a convertible one yeah. that, like, you
it's
can lay it down flat.
It's a dolly and a
or,
cart. Yeah.
It's a dolly
those
and
are
a
really
cart.
A good
yeah.
investment.
And yeah. we I bought, lashing straps so we can lash things down. We can tie it down to the hand cart if we
nice.
So need to.
Bumpy terrain.
Oh, exactly. Lot. Because yep. we've tipped over bins, and all I see is the
product.
Dollar sign yep. going down the drain. Because it's like my big thing is, like, you know, we need to treat this the way it is. I cannot. How do you justify pricing something at $500 and it's got a big scratch or a dent or something or damage of some mm-hmm. kind in an obvious space? Like, how do you justify that? Like, right. honestly, if I'm going to buy something that's $500, I'll be damned if I'm going to.
It's going to be perfect.
Damaged. Yes, it's going to be. It's got to be worth to me. It's the quality. That's all the other thing. Like, our brand is quality, mm-hmm. not just quantity, not just. You know, the art itself, but it's the quality of the product mm-hmm. itself. So, like, the blanks make a difference, and the blanks mean something. Like, when I buy pieces from you guys, and it's like those sharp edges and that, like, really
crispy.
Like really good quality. Yes, crispy. Like, and it's the blank itself is art all in itself. And when then I add to it, like, those pointy points had to stay pointy until it goes home with somebody. If that person drops it and makes
that's
it not
them.
Pointy, hey, that's all on you. That's all on you. But I'm going to get it to you, like, and I'm charging hundreds of dollars for this piece. It's going to have, like, the points that you could sit there and, like, do bloody things with, you know what I mean? Like,
you draw blood with
sit
it.
There
yeah.
and murder somebody.
Exactly.
Exactly. Like, but, you know, and it's not just, like, your blanks, although I love your wood, like, any, if I'm going to spend the money on a piece of wood, on a blank, and it, I'm spending good money on it, like, the art is an addition to it, and then I raise the price, but that piece has to be, the quality has to be there. Like, mm-hmm. I want people to go, my God, the quality of her work, of the piece itself was
so good.
Chef's kiss. Right, and that's what I want. Like, I want to be known for the artists who put their time and their effort not only into the art itself, but, like, the piece mm-hmm. itself. Right? Like, I want, because, like, and most people that I've charged prices for, and that they're, like, looking at, and I could see them looking at it. They look at the work at a market, right? And they're just like, they're like nose to nose, and they're like, oh my God, look at the detail. And they can see it and they can appreciate it, right? But then they look at the price and they're just like, oh, you know, you get that mm-hmm. look of, oh, that's a big sticker price, but
it makes sense.
You know what I mean? Exactly. I want to sell quality product. Like, I want, that's what I want to be known as. Like, yeah, oh, you need this stuff. Oh, I know this artist who does pyrography, and they're good quality. Like, you're going to get a good thing from them, right? And then, because then I can charge the higher price.
Yeah, you can.
I feel, or I feel more comfortable charging the higher price.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more of what it is, right?
All right, tip number two, make yourself a good toolkit. I know you have a good toolkit. We have a good toolkit.
That's one of the questions.
We need to do an episode on toolkits. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. Because we will, honey, we will spend the next 45 minutes talking about toolkits.
Okay. Rapid fire. Toolkit, need a garbage can, paper towels, baby wipes, bags, charger, a mallet.
You're not gonna remember everything. We will do an episode on toolkits.
Yes, no, it's a rapid fire.
We will do an episode on toolkits. You're gonna forget so many things, and I think it's worth.
Yeah, let's write down the toolkit idea on the potential. Okay,
I will put that in the document that I started and says future
tip
topics.
Tip number three: show up early.
Always.
Do not think I can get this set up in a half hour.
Oh, God. No.
Give yourself as much time as they will allow you. If they say you could show up anytime between 9 and 9:30, be there at 8:45. Mm-hmm. Because that extra time that you have to set up is going to be the time that you're not going to be standing in front of your booth blocking everybody from seeing your product because you're still setting things up and pricing things.
The amount of people that walk around. Okay, so like when we're setting up at our shows, when other vendors are done setting up, usually they will go walk around before the show opens or they start or whatever. Like we always get people who are like, oh, I'm just looking, I'm at booth, whatever, you know, like show starts in 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like they're not the shoppers, they're your fellow vendors, but like people are walking around, so it will.
And they buy stuff.
They do buy stuff. Yep. That's
well, not only that, like I've had people go, yeah, I was at that other tent down the way and they said to come this way because you had some really great stuff, right? And it's all about the word of mouth.
This is true. Yeah. A lot of word of mouth and a lot of good connections happen when it's early, it's before the show, you're ready to go 20 minutes early, 30 minutes early, whatever. Like, don't think of it as a waste of time. Think of it as, like, an opportunity. Like, it can be an opportunity for you to take a breath and regather yourself and eat your breakfast muffin. You know, you can use it as personal time. You could use it as networking time. You can use it as research time. You can walk around and take pictures of other people's booths. So now you have ideas, you know, like, you can use that time to your advantage in so many ways, but being ready early, it will just save you the peace of mind every time. Like, it's worth it.
And Brian's last tip is learn how to tell stories. Tell stories about your product. Tell stories about the materials. Tell stories about how something was made. Like, just a quick example of that. We will oftentimes tell people the story about how we were doing a market and it started raining. And then we can joke around about how, well, our stuff's all waterproof. So, you know, we don't have to worry about when it rains, you know, and it's like, ha ha ha. You know, it's kind of it's not this, you know, great story, but it's a nice little segue into the quality of the product and just a way of, you know, making a small connection with people. So, you know, knowing how to just talk conversationally and tell stories and try to, you know, connect with people on a personal level is as important as, you know, anything else. So
that's valid.
Definitely work. That is a skill to work on, and it's a skill that you'll have to develop throughout your whole life. And I still am developing.
You know, just along the lines of, you know, getting there early and getting prepared early and being done before start time, like that also puts you in a very particular mental space, right? Like when we're, I know that like when we set up and we're early, we're done early because we're having a great day and we've set up and just like, ooh, 1, 2, 3, we're done. Like, and it's just like, oh, wow, we're not stressing. It puts us in a calmer headspace. Mm-hmm. And I think that also shows.
Yeah.
And because then we're just in a particular mood, yeah. Right? And like that shows, I think, to passersby. Like, I think, like, when we did Nebels, we were stressing because we were late. We were not feeling well. We were, you know, we were battling our own things physically, right? And we were tired and then having to get everything together. And it was just like, we just were not furfering, as mm-hmm. I call it. Because mm-hmm. I say, like, oh, we're busy furfering today. You know, that was not a busy furfer day. We were just off our game. And I wonder if that's partially, like, it showed mm-hmm. to the passerbys. Because I know the days that we're good to go, it's like, we're on fire. Yeah. We're just in that headspace, and we're just in that mood, and we're just on fire. We're just, you know, out there and friendly and selling and whatever. And just making connections. And I think that definitely plays a part in a market. Mm-hmm. Like, where you are. Like, if we're not, if me and him are at outs, I think it shows. Mm-hmm. And I think as much as we try to put on a face that we're okay, I think people can tell. Yeah. And I think that makes a difference. Because, yep. Like, when we're on a roll, oh, when we're on a roll, it's game mm-hmm. on. You yeah. know? And that's part of it when we're at markets.
All right. And I think that's it for tips. We are like way over time. So
yeah, this one was a hefty episode.
Yeah, you're going to delete a lot of the, you're going to cut out some stuff.
I don't think I'm
going to
cut out that much. We had a lot of good conversations.
Yes, we did. We definitely did have a lot of
we did.
Good info on here.
Cool. Cool. Well, thank you so much for doing a deep dive and having all of this awesome conversation about your business and such. I think that's it for this episode. If you have any questions for Brian or Zona or the two of them, you can find them at BZFurfer on Instagram and Facebook, and then BZFurfer.com. You can also find David and I at It's David and Renee and It'sDavidAndRenee.com, and our Pyrography podcast. It, like, our website is pyrotoastytalks.com. We are on social media at pyrotoastytalks. Feel free to send us a message, shoot us a DM, let us know what you think. We also have a Discord that's also pyrotoastytalks, and we would love to hear your thoughts on this episode, anything that you want to hear more about, questions about, whatever. You are free to talk about it and let us know. All right, that's it for this episode, guys. Stay toasty.
Yes, stay toasty.